This is WAMC's Northeast Report. I'm Jim Lavoulis. We're joined now by WAMC's Alan Chartok and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon. What about you, Governor? No good afternoon?
I said good afternoon. I don't think I was connected at the time. I think he's selective in who he connects, when he connects them. If he likes what they say, he connects them.
Well, who do you think signs his paycheck?
Censorship. It's censorship.
Here we are with Governor Andrew Cuomo, who is about to give a very substantial or important, not substantial, important speech at the Democratic National Convention, the virtual convention. Governor, that's got to be a tough one for you. You know, your dad made history with his incredible speech, which had Walter Cronkite saying, "There goes the next president of the United States," on the radio, on the television. So how formidable is that in terms of, you know, Dr. Freud and psychology and all that?
Well, first, I've spoken, it's a good question. I've spoken at conventions before, and actually in situations that were more analogous to a convention speech, right? My father's was the keynote, so he had much more time. It was like a half an hour, that speech. And when you give, that was a speech. That's in a room, there's feedback from the audience, there are applause. That's a speech. And I've given other convention speeches in that environment, not as long and not as not the premium position, but those were more analogous. This is a virtual convention, so they are video remarks. You know, it's not a speech. You're not at a podium. You're seated at a table. I was given 5 minutes, which is actually one of the longer periods of time. There are people speaking for 1 or 2 minutes.
Right.
So it's apples and oranges, this one versus a real convention speech. But in the 5 minutes, I'm pleased with what I say. The argument that there is a national crisis. I use a metaphor. I say the COVID virus itself is a metaphor for the ailment that we're facing, because a virus attacks the body when the body is weak. And the American body politic is weak because the American body politic is divided, and it's never been this divided before. That's why we are susceptible to the virus. And then the federal government, which is a metaphorical immune system, was incompetent to respond. I liked that device, if you will, to the extent you can have a device in 5 minutes. But I think that's true. You know, it's not COVID. It's not just the George Floyd tension. It's what it is evidencing. It's evidencing a divided nation, and a divided nation is weak. It's evidencing a government that can't respond. It's just not functional. And I really believe, Alan, I don't get into it in the speech, but I think this is going to be a transformational moment in politics. Actually, I'm working on a book at the same time, and I did say this in the book. This could be an FDR transformational moment. When was the last time government mattered? Think about it. Not in a generation. You know, you'd have to go back to the Vietnam War. Otherwise, government, you know, it raises my taxes. It's a pain in the neck. This is different. I don't care what you thought yesterday about government. I don't care if you weren't engaged politically. You care about government today. It's a matter of life and death. It is making a dramatic effect on your life, and it has to work. And you know what government worked and what government didn't work. It's in the numbers now. So I think this could be a whole transformational moment if the Democrats do it right.
So back to your father for a moment. I was running around the car today, and I was thinking about father-son teams, which had, you know, somebody in a position and then somebody else years later. So We have you and your dad, both governors. And we have, a whole of the Browns out in California. Can you think of any others?
Browns, Bushes, Gores.
Bushes, yeah, Gores. Mm. And what do you think about that? You think that's genetic or what?
No, I think it's normal in some way. Sons of a carpenter grow up to be a carpenter. Mm-hmm. Daughters of scientists grow up to be scientists. You sit at a kitchen table and you hear how this is the greatest occupation in the world, and you're making a difference, and it's honorable. I don't think it's surprising that you follow that. In the book, I'm going to get at this. There's a period of time that we never discussed, and that by definition you wouldn't be privy to. It was the period of time post my father's loss and post my loss, okay? And we both spent years sitting on the couch rerunning the game tapes. What we should have
sitting
done.
On the couch or lying on the couch?
Sitting, because we were both on the couch, and two okay. of us can't lie on the couch, but I know what you were saying. Yeah. No, we were sitting on the couch watching the ball game and just talking through what we did right, what we did wrong, what we would do differently if we ever got a chance, and then, bang, I wind up getting a second chance as Attorney General. So that was a pivotal moment, really, for both my father and myself. And I tried to do it with that analysis and with that hindsight. You die, and then you review your life on your deathbed, and then the doctor comes and says, "Oh, hold on a second, we just discovered a drug. Here, take this pill, and you have a second chance." You do it a lot differently the second time.
Boy, oh boy. Okay, back to more mundane things, although I could talk about this for hours. What do you think of the selection of Senator Harris as Joe Biden's running mate?
I think it was very good. I think it's going to excite people to the extent they say people aren't excited. I think this is exciting. I think it's exciting for Californians. It's exciting for women. It's exciting for members of the black community. I think she's young. I think she's dynamic. So I think it's all good. I know her. She's very impressive. So I think it's all positive, that's for sure.
Well, there's a very good chance, you look at the odds that she's going to end up as the next president of the United States. Let's face it. If she gets elected as vice president and he's an older man, that could pass the torch. Or he says at one point or another, I don't know how to take it, that he was only going to be one term. I never quite believe that. But if that were true, she would be the natural successor, wouldn't she?
Yes. And look, I think it would be historic. I think it would excite a lot of people. My daughters, they're ready for a woman to be president. I think so is the country. And I think it would be empowering, and it would be a new first. I mean, look, when we elected President Obama, how proud we were of ourselves as Americans, right? I think the same is going to be true when we elect the first woman.
Okay. But, of course, there's got to be something going through your mind and saying, well, had I been the vice presidential candidate, then I would be the next president, right?
I never wanted to be the vice president. I said I would not accept the nomination. That whole Sherman tarantella on vice president.
When was the last time you spoke with Joe Biden?
A couple of weeks.
What was that about?
Just general catch up. How are things going? Nothing specific. I know him a long time. He's a personal friend. And no specific agenda. I mean, obviously, he's running for president, so there's a lot to talk about, but that nothing beyond that.
You think he's got the get up and go and oomph to do it? Some people are saying that he's pretty lethargic.
No, he's fit. He's tougher than people think. But he's playing it smart. You know, let's be honest. This is about Joe Biden, but more this election is about Donald Trump. He is the incumbent, and he's so big, and he's doing so much Trump, or creating so many waves, that it's about Donald Trump. And Biden is critiquing Trump. This is what I would have done differently. But it's President Trump. It's how he handled COVID. It's how he's divided the country. It's the George Floyd murder and the aftermath. That's what this election is going to be about.
Using PowerPoint tonight, like you do when you talk to the American people.
I don't want to give it away, but I tease it. That's all I do.
Okay. Now, when Biden gives his acceptance speech, what should he be saying?
He should be laying out an affirmative vision for the country. He should not be doing much of a current critique. People get that, you know. That's why I think this has been such a unique moment, Alan. Government mattered. People focused. They watched it. They know what it performed, and they know what it didn't perform, and they have their opinions. I mean, this COVID, think about it. Not since the Vietnam War did you sit at home every night and see the death numbers on the screen. You know, this has captured everyone's attention because it's governing everybody's life. It really is fascinating time.
Is the president responsible for that? I keep thinking he is because he didn't prepare us.
I would put aside the preparation, okay? Because that's a deeper discussion. Where was the CDC? Where was NIH? To the extent the World Health Organization missed it, the World Health Organization has been funded by a lot of presidents. It is still shocking to me that a virus could start in China, go to Europe, and then come here from Europe, and everybody is still watching China. I mean, how can that be? Whoever expected that the virus would still be in China 2 months later, you know? It's almost astonishing. And not just the federal agencies, but I got to tell you, you had all these experts, all these global experts. The coronavirus is in China in December. And February, we think it's still in China. You know, didn't anyone think that somebody with a virus is going to get on a plane and go somewhere? So I would say forget the preparation and don't get into the stockpiles and how many ventilators should we have had, et cetera. It's going forward. It's once you knew it was here and you have Dr. Fauci and you have the CDC and you have all this information, how did you handle it? Once they handed you the bucket full, what did you do?
So can you answer that? Can you answer that question? How did he do?
Well, I say look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. Look at the numbers. I'll tell you what I do say tonight. I say, because here's the great question. Look at how we handled New York. And why are we the exception? Why did New York get ambushed by this virus? We had nobody knew it was here. And that's not shame on us. That's shame on everybody else because the planes from Europe landed in New York. Okay, we get handed the worst situation on the globe in terms of spike. How do we go from the highest infection rate to the lowest, and now we're sitting around watching states all across the country go through the roof, and we're quarantining them? How do you explain that juxtaposition? How? And I say tonight, I don't want to say too much about tonight because I know you. You go to sleep early. You won't even watch. But they watched New York 6 months later. you're seeing these states spike. You had 6 months. Where's the testing? Where's the tracing? Where's the quarantine? You had 6 months. We had 2 weeks in New York. We went from the first case to total shutdown in 18 days. How incredible. I mean, that's why I call it an ambush. You had 6 months. How were you still unprepared in 6 months? And that's a question for some states, frankly, but also for the federal government, because they're the ones who decided this management model. It's up to 50 states. Then the president gave his theory. It's only the flu. It's going to go away. It's going to be gone by Easter. It's going to go away when it gets warm. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. Take hydroxychloroquine. Everything's better. And the states, frankly, that followed his advice then saw this phenomenal spike and death rate that was unnecessary. That's his problem with COVID. That's the Senate's problem with COVID. See, I think these Republicans in the Senate are in real trouble.
I agree. Nobody cares, but I agree. I think that's right. They're between a rock and a hard place.
Oh, yeah. Because, Alan, this is not a political question. This is now a performance question and a common sense question. Americans know what happened. You're not going to explain to them what happened. They lived it every day of their life. And it was not handled well. And they know it.
Because we're running out of time, I want to ask you about the post office. Obviously, you know, this is on everybody's lips. We live by the post office. We get our medications from the post office. You know, it was working. And now all of a sudden, perhaps because the president thinks that online voting will kill him, he starts talking about taking down the post office. Here's a question. How outrageous can you be?
You can be. There is no limit to how outrageous you can be. I'll make you a wager. How much do you have in your pocket?
$1.50.
All right. I'll bet you $1.50.
Yeah.
I'll bet you $2, and then you'll owe me 50 cents.
I haven't got $2. No, go ahead, please.
$2. What's going to happen is Donald Trump is going to lose the election. Donald Trump is going to contest the election. And he's going to use this mail-in ballot argument that they have been seeding for months. And the post office argument in his Bush v. Gore Supreme Court case. It's not going to be about hanging chads. It's going to be about mail fraud and postal service failure. That's going to be his lawsuit.
And so when it gets to the Supreme Court of the United States, what happens there? Did these guys all fall in line and salute?
No, he's going to lose in the Supreme Court because and his appointees have signaled this. You know, it goes back to my father's line about 10. You have one job. You have nine.
One
in grade. They're now Supreme Court justices. You know, they have their own reputations to worry about. And they're not going to wind up being political puppets for a president and calling an election. They're not going to make that their legacy. They're now Supreme Court justices. And I think the honor of that position is going to prevail. I think you'll have the Attorney General Barr, who's shown that he's just a political proxy. He'll make the argument. But in some ways, there's an old Yiddish expression, a thief gives himself away because his hat burns. You've been making the argument for months already. Oh, mail-in ballots, there's a lot of fraud. There's a lot of fraud. Mail-in ballots, Democratic states have a lot of fraud. Post office can't deliver mail. Picking up mailboxes, so now they really can't deliver mail. So I think otherwise, what else is all of this? except the setup.
Some Democrats are crying foul that the Republicans, such as Governor John Kasich of Ohio, are being invited to speak at the convention to discuss their support of Biden. What do you think about that?
It's fair game. It's fair game, right? Whenever one party gets a person from the other party to endorse, they put that person up on the pulpit as far as high as they can.
It's like capture the white flag. You bring them over to
yes.
the other side.
Yes. Mm.
Okay, so you don't have any problem with that, right?
Nope.
Okay. Now, if your support of Biden hurt New York, for the rest of the year, or possibly the next 4 years, if he wins, I mean, what do you think of that? Do you ever worry about that?
What else could they do to New York? What else could they do to New York? Well, they could pass a special tax provision that raises our taxes. Did it with SALT. They could stop funding the Second Avenue subway that they've always funded. Did it. They could refuse to approve any new projects like your train to LaGuardia. They did it. They could take just capricious and arbitrary actions and use the government against you, like the Trusted Traveler program, where the Department of Homeland Security ended a program to show their disdain that you did undocumented driver's licenses. Did it. What else are they going to do? And by the way, we don't survive this. If we don't get funding from the federal government to make up for the deficit on the state side, these are terrible years. You know, the question is, could we survive another 4 years of the Donald Trump presidency with his constant attacks?
Then explain to me, Governor, how come CNN just had a poll which showed only a 5-point difference between the two candidates, Biden in the lead, by what I could only call a stinking 5 points?
First of all, I have to be careful what I say about CNN, because I have a brother who works there. And then see if something happens, like if he says something wrong and he gets fired, it's all going to be my fault because I said something about their poll. That Biden is ahead is remarkable to me, because your point, it's not that Biden, he hasn't even had the convention yet. He hasn't put forth his affirmative game yet, and he's already ahead because they're looking at what President Trump has done, and it's disapproval of President Trump, right? ABC, anyone but Cuomo. It's a litmus test on the incumbent and how they feel about the incumbent. And yes, we were a divided nation, but nobody thought the president was going to add to the division. And that was the post-George Floyd situation, where we now have a real chasm in this country, which is disquieting. And it's the COVID management. You don't get away from that, Alan. You know, people are bottom-line oriented. Your listenership went down. Your viewership went down. The value of the stock went down. My portfolio went down. There is a measurable index to government. You look at people's opinions on governors and mayors across this country. They are hard and fast because people watched them through COVID, and they made a determination. And that's what you're seeing with President Trump. I think there's been nothing more descriptive than his management of COVID. If he was the commander in chief and went to war and lost the war, right? He went to war against COVID and lost the war.
Now, he's been giving, Governor, he's been giving racist dog whistles for quite a while now. What's in it for him? In other words, why is he doing that?
He plays politics. We all have politics. Different levels, some just with our spouse, some with a larger group, and he supports his base and whips up his base, and that's a message that he's been sending since he ran in the Republican primary for president. They gave him that script. they said you have to run far to the right. Who's ever most conservative wins the primary. And he picked up that script, and he's been with it ever since.
Is America too racist?
America, the tension that we had at birth, we have today. The concept of taking different people, different religions, different cultures, putting them on one piece of land and forging a community from them, e pluribus unum. That was the founding premise. Had never been done before, has never been done before, and it is difficult. There's a human instinct to fear differences. You're a different religion. You're a different skin color. I fear that. I fear differences. You have to get to people's better selves to be accepting and to be loving. And that's the tension that we endure. Sometimes we do better, sometimes we do worse. The fear is easy to stoke. And it's easy for a politician to stoke that fear.
Okay.
And I think that's what you're seeing now.
Got 4 minutes. I want to ask you this. You've been opposed, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you've been opposed to a millionaire's tax, a change in the way we tax people in New York State. They would run away. They got other places. Let me ask you this. If they don't come through with the money you just described as being absolutely imperative to running New York, would you change your mind on that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I haven't been opposed to a wealth tax. I said it should be done on the national level. These federal officials are saying New York should do it. No, federal official, if you believe in it, do it federally. And don't put us at a competitive disadvantage with other states. Just make it across the board. Every state, this is what you pay. Do it at the federal level.
All true, but they're not going to do that. All true, but they're not going to do that. Then you're faced with the real question. Do you do it or not?
We have the second highest income tax in the United States, as it is. It's only California is higher than us. So we have a significant wealth tax. And I am worried about our competitive position. I believe it's on the federal government, and they have to deliver, and they have to bring home the bacon on this one, and it can't be a press release because we have a $14 billion deficit, and they have to provide funding, period. And I'm not going to say, well, we'll make it up. No, it's on them. It's on the senators, and it's on the congresspeople. They have to perform just the way we performed here on the state level. And I'm not going to let them off the hook, Alan.
Well, suppose you don't let them off the hook. Tough noogies. I mean, they just won't. They'll do what they want to do. They don't care, do they?
Well, if they should care because they're running for election. And if they come back from the Congress and they bring a big goose egg after we dealt with the worst problem in the country on COVID, and we get no federal help, and then we have this tremendous deficit, and you're going to see possible additional taxes and additional cuts, that's on them. And they don't want that on them.
I got a
and
minute.
It will be on them.
I got a minute. I got to ask you. Are you satisfied with the response you're getting from the school districts? You demanded a plan from everybody. Are they all up to date, or is people dragging their heels?
I think a lot of the school districts are missing the point. They're doing this as a bureaucratic exercise. They did a plan, so they think they can open. Talk to the parents and talk to the teachers. They are the arbiters, and you have to sell the parents and the teachers that your plan is safe because they're nervous. And I think I've been working very hard to try to get the local school districts to understand that. Just because you say school opens first week of September doesn't mean anybody's going to show up. You have to explain to the parents why it's a smart plan. And many of them don't get that. And I'm getting hundreds of calls from parents and teachers with questions. And they're savvy because they listen to my briefings. We have the most educated people in the country on COVID. And they have good questions.
You do. We're out of time. You are wonderful for coming on and being with us. I always admire the fact that you you come to WAMC and you allow us to talk to you directly, and that really is quite good for us. And I don't know if it's good for you, but it's great for us, and we thank you so much.
If it's good for you, it's good for me. Don't forget the $2 wager. Because I won't. Okay. We'll argue about that next time.
So long.
Thank you.